Lucas Duda, the star of all of Mike's teams.
He's my boyfriend.
November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 55 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella. But with me, as never before, is our new producer, which we want to introduce you to. His name is George Bissell. He is a new addition to the fantasy staff here at BP, and because he did not lie to me and tell me that he had no experience recording and editing podcasts, he's here. So, George, why don't you introduce yourself as our banter this evening and tell people a little bit about you.
Yeah, hey, Brett, Mike, as you heard, I'm George Bissell. I've been writing over at the Dynasty Guru since last offseason. It's always been a goal of mine ever since I got back into writing fantasy content to become a part of the staff here at Baseball Prospectus. You know, it's just such a great crew, you know, whether it's Brett, Mike, Craig, Ben, Jeff, and you know, so many of the other good writers on the staff, and just aspiring to get to that level, and huge for me to get there, and looking forward to giving it everything I got, and real excited to be a part of the team. It's going to be a lot of fun. Got some big shoes to fill, stepping in for Mao, who's you know doing some big things right now, and real excited to be a part of the team going forward.
Yeah, well, welcome to George. Mao, as some of you know, has weaseled his way onto what was his third podcast. So we've agreed to let him go to focus on both Tino and the new Raw Projection podcast, which is the Prospect podcast, which you should all be listening to if you enjoy talk about prospects. It's quite excellent. Anyway, moving onwards and upwards. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. It's two S's, two L's. And that's pretty much now. Now that I said that once, that's the way I'm going to say it literally until this podcast ends. So I hope everyone liked that. We are going to... We're going to talk a little bit about expert fab betting this week, as we are wont to do, and then we're going to talk about the new fantasy app that we released at BP this week. Specifically, we're going to talk about our new top 300 rankings, some players that moved up and down, sort of what the temperature is on some of these guys. So. Let's start off with this week's action in expert leagues. So I'm going to kick it out to Mike, and why don't you start us off?
Sure. Well, you know, as we've been doing, and I think actually we've at the point we're kind of getting questioned about a little bit. I did by a couple of our readers in Tuesday's Fab write up. Our bids have been fairly conservative. In labor, and you know, part of the reason, and I don't want to jinx everything and have the wheels fall off, is that we're doing pretty well. We're bouncing kind of between first and second. We're in a bit of a dogfight with Steve Gardner of USA Today, which if you're listening to the show, you know that you know we're in a fight with him, or we will be all year. He had a really good draft, and you know he actually had the big bid this week. He bid $15 on Tanner Roark, and added him with the next highest bid being $8. We actually didn't bid on Roark. We bid on a series of pitchers, which I'll get to in a minute. But Brett, how do you feel about that Roark bid? My feeling about it is I like Roark, but that seemed a little bit aggressive. On the other hand, Steve had a little bit more fab than we did, so probably felt he could be aggressive with the bid.
Yeah, I like the player, don't love the bid.
Okay.
But then again, you know, I don't know. I think Steve, do you know how much fab he has? He is a pretty healthy amount.
He has more than we do, and I think even with that bid, he's, I don't have him in front of me, but I think even with that bid, he's in the 50s.
Yeah. So I get that. I mean, there is a
use it or lose it quality. I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, we're past the, you know, 1/4 of the season, and in the second half, particularly in a mixed league, just not as much comes across. You don't have players coming from the other league like you do in Tout NL or AL. So yeah, I mean, that's definitely an imperative to spend there.
Yep. Completely agree. I mean, just for reference, in a in my big home league, which plays, it's a little complex to explain, but it plays essentially as a 10-team only league. I picked up Roark this week for $6, and that's a league that actually allows $0 bid. So I was surprised I got him with that bid. There was more activity for him here. So I do like it. I like the Pfister hedge. I think there's at least a reasonable chance that Pfister is either out for a while or kind of bounces out of healthiness, which I know makes Mike sad because Mike has Pfister on NL Tout. But we'll...
I have Pfister almost everywhere, but yeah, NL Tout is the team that we can get into this in a minute, where the offense I thought would be shaky and is great, and the pitching I have Kershaw and is mediocre. Yeah. So, life's fun.
Yeah. So Roark was not one of the guys we bid on. So let's talk about the two guys that we bid on but didn't get. The first guy that we had the biggest bid on was Jaime Garcia. We bid $4. He went for $7 to Fangraphs, and you know, I still like that bid. I like the $7 bid for a team that has a little bit more fab than we had, but I can't quit Jaime Garcia. I never will be able to, and you know, he's anything but a sure bet to stay healthy. But yeah, he's also a pretty safe bet to perform well while he is healthy.
The other side of this too, you know, with our bids, and you know, people are asking why they're so conservative, and this is why I kind of want to address this. If you both read the Fab column and listen to the show, our front three of Jake Arrieta, Gerrit Cole, and Jacob deGrom for a 15-team mixed, I mean, that's a really strong front three. You know, Cole and Arrieta in particular have both pitched like aces. They kind of justified where we took them on the wheel in the draft. So it's kind of put us in a position where it's like, well, you know, we like Jaime Garcia, but we don't necessarily feel this need to be aggressive. Whereas if you're a mid-pack team like Mike Podhers or a Fangraphs is, sure, you know, you're in seventh place. You know, you've got 2 whip points. You've got 5, you know, points in ERA, which is toward the bottom in both cases. Sure, you want to be aggressive. You know, in our case, we're first in whip. We're second in ERA. There isn't really that imperative to go crazy for a pitcher.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
And then the other guy that we bid out on and lost on was Kendall Graveman. We bid $2. That was the second highest bid. And Jeff Erickson of RotoWire got him for $5.
Yeah. Which again, I like that buy, just not that number for our team at this particular moment.
Yeah, and the thing I'll say about Graveman, and I mentioned this in the Fab column, you know, when he was up before, he was having problems locating, he was leaving the ball up, which with, you know, pitcher with his stuff, which is, you know, okay but not great, was a problem. I noticed, and I think this was actually Jeremy Koo of Athletics Nation wrote about this, and I noticed this as well. Graveman was locating a lot better. He was leaving the ball down. That's obviously going to be a huge thing for him. I think he got 9 ground ball outs. Don't quote me on that. It was 8 or 9. But if he can do that, you know, with that team and with that park, it's definitely a formula for success. I don't want to oversell it. You know, we're still looking, I think, at a 4 or 5. But it can still play because of the park and because of the fact that we're not playing off of WAR, but rather playing off of raw value, you know, raw numbers like ERA, WHIP, et cetera.
Yeah, I would paint a much less rosy picture of Graveman, even though
that wasn't even that optimistic.
I was certainly in favor of bidding on him and using him in the short term. And Graveman Graveman has the stuff of a swingman. He needs to have precise command to make it work as a back-end starter. And if he loses that, you saw exactly what happens. Yeah. And, you know, it could very easily happen again. And the A's have some pitching coming back over the course of the next month. So, you know, there's no guarantee he'll stick unless he performs really well. Unless he essentially does what Jesse Chavez has done, which is pitch his way essentially into a semi-permanent spot in that rotation. So at this point, I would like to gloss over the guy that we picked up.
I don't think you can.
No. The guy who I wanted to add to the list this week was Joe Kelly. I do think that having him as a reserve on a team 15 team mix is a good play. I think he's someone who carries more upside than most pitchers that are going to come across the waiver wire. But this was a bad week to pick him up. He got shelled in his first outing of the week, and he has another one coming up. At least we think. Well, George, you're up in Red Sox country. Are they going to push everyone back with Eduardo Rodriguez coming up tomorrow?
Well, I think they're actually going to go to a 6-man rotation is the early word that I've heard, and a lot of that's going to depend, obviously, on how Eduardo Rodriguez pitches. He's got something like a 43-7 strikeout to walk ratio in AAA coming into the start. So it's a big deal that he's up. He's a guy who I think long term the Orioles are really going to regret having traded away. When you look at the velocity spike and just how well he's pitched ever since arriving with the Red Sox. So he's the first guy out of the big three they have in the minor leagues to get a shot. And it looks like they're going to the 6-man. Porcello started today. So it looks like 6 is going to be the new normal, at least to start. And you got to figure at some point someone will be going to the bullpen.
Yeah. And yeah, but hopefully it's not Kelly for our sake. It probably will be Kelly. But maybe he'll be really good out of the bullpen and give us another option that we can keep on the bench for a little while. But speaking of bullpen arms that we can have to stash and use, we want to talk about Mike. You want to talk about the last guy that we picked up for a buck?
Yeah, and let's give our colleague Keith Cromer a little bit of credit here. You know, Keith has been all over Carson Smith. I mean, he's been talking about it for a month. And Brett, you correctly pointed out that, you know, Keith has been talking about Carson Smith like since way back in February. And, you know, the way things have played out so far in Seattle, Fernando Rodney's been shaky. I think he's on the last year of his deal, but even if he even wasn't, Seattle's on a competitive footing. So, you know, there's a good opportunity, we think, for Carson Smith to close. And I think it could happen sooner rather than later. If it does, that gives us the potential for 4 closers in labor, and that's our 1 week category at the moment. You know, we did our tradition of taking guys who wouldn't close. The difference this year is we did a little bit later with Jenry Mejia and Pat Neshek. We have since we're aggressive on Jason Grilly with our big bid. We picked up Ramos with a low bid right before he was put in. And we traded, I think we talked about this last week, we traded Anthony Goes for Luke Gregerson. So we currently have 3 closers and already could make a big move. I think if Smith gets the job, and I'm guessing he will in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we can make a really big move.
Yeah, Smith is getting a big, big bump this week on the stats list. I think he could start seeing save opportunities as soon as the next time Fernando Rodney pitches, which may, you know, I could see him getting a save opportunity by the weekend. But it's certainly nowhere near a sure bet. Rodney has a track record, and he's getting the money. So they're going to give him the opportunity to right the ship. I don't have a ton of confidence that he can.
No, and we've seen this before with Rodney. I mean, you know, he certainly had that year in Tampa Bay where he was just ridiculous. But, you know, we've also seen the other side of it where he just hasn't been that good. And, you know, if the control goes with him, he's almost worthless, and he's not one of those relievers who's just going to stick around, like, you know, Addison Reed in Arizona, where he might get the job back at some point. I think if Rodney's done, he's done.
Yeah, this is like this would be, you know, to use the corollary, this would be a Grant Balfour situation. if he loses the job, he's gone. This is the last year of, I'm looking on Baseball Reference now, it is the last year of his deal.
I thought so.
So yeah, if he loses the job, I could with the depth that the Mariners have in relief, I could see them just releasing him. But we're not there yet. It's just which is why he was available for a dollar. So they don't call it a spec play for nothing.
I mean, you know, honestly though, and this is funny, and you know, I know we want to keep the show short tonight, but I am a little bit surprised between, you know, Ramos and Smith that there isn't a little bit more speculating and labor on like closers in waiting, particularly because of the six-man reserves. I know you have to keep a guy active for a week, but it just seems to me that some of the bottom teams would behoove them a little bit more to spend like $2, maybe $3 on guys like this, particularly if you're lower in the standings and need to take risks.
Yeah, I think you see it more with a league that has $0 bids, but I totally agree that.
Yeah, it's true.
We found some success, so we're hoping it continues. So let's move on to NL Tout. Did you do anything this week, Mike?
Well, I put a bid in on Ben Paulson. We discussed this when we were texting. You said to bid 10 to 12. I was joking that 11 was kind of the amount I wanted to bid. I would have been tied for second if not for Ray Guyfoyle, friend of the show, Fake Teams, bid 45. And because of the Vickery rules, and George, I don't know if you're familiar with Vickery or not from, you know, reading our stuff.
Yep.
So, you know, it's second highest bid plus one. So he got him for 16, which is a pretty, you know, effective use of Vickery. I know from talking to Ray that he's a lot higher on Paulson than I am. He thinks that he'll supplant Willen Rosario at first and be the regular first baseman, and that Justin Morneau either won't come back from, you know, the problems he's having, or he'll come back and get traded. You know, I kind of feel like, well, you know, Paulson's decent, but even in the situation in Colorado, he's probably going to be in a job share unless they get rid of everybody. It's a decent bid. You know, my thing is my offense in Tout is doing so well that I felt like 11 was aggressive enough. I didn't really feel the need to push the envelope there.
Yeah, I think it was a fair. I think it was a fair bid. I mean, we joked around about it about that being the number, and it was not quite enough. But yeah, I think at the very least, I think we'll see Paulson stick on the major league roster for the rest of the year, and, you know, play a couple of days a week. And in Colorado, that is still a pretty good proposition. Yeah.
And then the other Colorado guy who went for double digits and the other big bid was Brandon Barnes on the Rockies. Steve Garner got him for 10. The next highest bid was 9, so it was really no Vickery play there. I just bid 1, which was, you know, kind of silly. But, you know, again, not really much of a need. And unlike Paulson, I see kind of even less of an angle there for Barnes. I wound up getting, just because I had an extra spot on reserve, Junior Lake, who, this is NL only, so don't laugh. He slid in for Jeff Francoeur, and he stole a base tonight as we're talking, so he did do something.
Junior Lake.
Yeah. My other play, I took Rafael Betancourt as a $0 play. He's pitched really well. And I have two closers in Tout. I've got Ramos and Grilly, which kind of dovetails nicely with the labor team. George and I, before the show, were talking about how it's good to have, a little bit of duplication.
Unless someone gets hurt, then you're in trouble. But otherwise, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. Well, my thing in Tout, George, is that, you know, when you don't, unless you listen to the show intently, you don't know. I started out with Addison Reed and LaTroy Hawkins, so I went from 2 to 0. So to be back up to two closers is good given those circumstances. But Betancourt at 0, I kind of look at. If Axford blows up for some reason, I think the way Betancourt's pitched, he'd get the job. If he doesn't, he's going to offer some pretty nice peripherals, I think. And he picked up a win for me the first day he was actually on my team, so that's always nice.
It is always nice.
I don't really see anyone else in the NL that really... it was kind of a once again a quiet week. You know, something kind of interesting that's in the Master's Ball article I didn't mention. I'm sitting on a pile of fab right now. I've got 94, and I added 11 because I reclaimed the salary of Hung Jin Ryu, who's out for the year. I know some people are kind of reticent to do this, but the way I'm looking at it is I'm doing well in tout as well. As I speak, I'm half a point up on Derek Hardy for first place. And I've seen Tristan Cockcroft, who's won, I think, for the last 75 years. I'm only joking, Tristan, if you're listening. It's three, which is still very impressive and a lot. Steve Gardner did this the year he won, which I think was the last non-Tristan winner. If you're doing well and you have that pile of fab, it kind of just allows you at the deadline to kind of pick the guy who comes in. And even if it's not a super stud, it still usually puts you in a nice position to kind of freeze out the opposition.
Yep. It's, you know, you were in that position last year, and the exact names didn't quite work out, I know, the way you wanted it to, but the process was sound.
Well, the difference last year was that I was kind of mid-pack and really needed both David Price and John Lester to come in. The luxury, if the team I have can maintain and be first or second, is that it can put me in the position to get, you know, even if the best guy comes in is someone like John Lackey, it still puts me in a position to freeze out, you know, the guys that I'm kind of hopefully going to be in the dogfight with, you know, and in tout, as we've talked about, you know, if Clayton Kershaw comes out and puts up even like a 2-3 the rest of the way, I should be in a pretty good and pretty competitive position.
Yeah, that makes sense. So anyone in the American League you want to cover before we move on?
What I'm looking at.
Wellington Castillo is the big bid.
Yeah, Wellington Castillo was the big bid. I know you like beef. I mean, we could certainly talk about him. I think that it looks like it's going to be a split or more of a split than I thought with him and Zunino. So he certainly has value in AL only. You know, given that the next highest was Giovanni Soto, who went for six, you know, comparatively, I'd rather have Castillo and spend the little bit of extra money there. You know, Ron Chandler, formerly of Baseball HQ and now of Chandler Park, he bid nine on Castillo and didn't get him. He bid seven on Soto and got him for six. He was clearly looking for the catcher.
Yep.
Makes sense. I mean, otherwise, it's a pretty quiet list. You know, Maxwell Muncy went for five. That's okay. You know, in an AL only, I think he'll play enough to potentially justify that. Buck Farmer for three is certainly interesting in an AL only. You know, a lot of these other bids are just kind of like bottom feeder bids. I think Dylan Bundy for one would have been an interesting spec play before his injury. Now I just kind of wonder.
Yeah, I love the fact that we've gotten to the point with Blake Snell where he's gone from like dynasty afterthought to guy who someone legitimately bids a dollar on in a redraft league. I think that's awesome. I don't think he makes the majors this year at all, but
he's got to build up innings. Isn't that the big concern? He just hasn't thrown a lot of innings in his career. He's been hurt.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing about tout is that even with four-man reserves, which are lower than labor and lower than CBS, which is the other only league, expert league I play in, people still make plays like this all the time. And to go back to the NL for a second, Jonathan Gray, who's been terrible this year, and John Moscott, who, you know, I talked to Brett about because you have more knowledge on the prospects than I do, and you gave him a thumbs down, both went for a dollar to Brian Walton. So the rules in tout is he's going to carry these guys on his active roster for a week. And, you know, they're going to put up zeros, which, you know, if your pitching stinks, that's fine because, you know, it's better than nothing. But basically, you know, that's the level of speculation that you get in these leagues.
Yeah, and to be honest, a week of Jonathan Gray in the minors for your active lineup is probably the best week he's going to provide the entire year.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's sad. But, all right, let's
move on to the guide.
Huh?
Are we going to move on to the guide?
We're going to move on to the guide. So we are at BP, we have released an in-season fantasy magazine where we have some articles by some of our staff members, a couple of contributions from Jeff Quinton, and we have our re-rankings. We have redone all of our positional tiers, and we put out a new top 300. So, first of all, if you haven't If you haven't seen that, download the Baseball Prospectus app, and you can choose to download the fantasy magazine. It is free. It is good to have and play around with. So we're going to talk about just a couple of choice guys on the top 300 here. The first guy I want to talk about, we'll keep this really brief because it's rather high end, but Bryce Harper we have now is the number 4 player in fantasy. He still won't stop hitting home runs. Do we think that we all know Harper's awesome. What are the odds that Harper does enough this year that he's the no question number 2 fantasy pick in redrafts in 2016, Mike?
I'd say there's a 85 to 90% chance that happens. I mean, really, it's 40 home runs seems pretty realistic for him. It's always been a question of health. You know, I think the Mike Trout factor has always led to people kind of being like, you know, oh God, you know, Bryce Harper's such a disappointment, even though that's just ridiculous. It's kind of a matter of, you know, can Andrew McCutchen, who's been really hurt and banged up this year, bounce back to that level? I don't think he can. You know, or can someone like Paul Goldschmidt produce at such a level that you'd rather have Goldschmidt? You know, in an OBP league, I might rather have Goldschmidt over Harper. But I think that if I'm putting a preliminary list together right now, I'm going to take Harper behind Trout and take him number 2.
All right. Let's go down a little bit further. There's a player. Let's talk about Ryan Braun. Ryan Braun clocks in at number 32 spot on here, which is a little bit of a it's right about the same place that I think we had him at the beginning of the season, maybe a touch lower because some people have jumped ahead of him. How much more, even though he's in a similar place, how much more confident are you about Braun hitting his hitting what we thought would be his healthy, realistic floor now than we were at the beginning of the season?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was kind of higher on Braun, I think, than a lot of people. And, you know, in some of my mocks, I was, or even actual drafts, I was taking him kind of at the beginning of the second round in a 15 team. I think he can still hit that top 20 potential, particularly if he's running. You know, the thing about him that kind of has been a bit of a question is the batting average. But I suspect the comfort level with his thumb and, you know, with kind of adjusting that has come back. I think top 20 is pretty realistic for him. I think putting him in the first round like he, you know, he used to be might not happen. But I you know top 20 is where he could get to.
All right. Let's move down to Billy Hamilton, someone we've talked about a bit on this podcast. If we knew for a fact that Hamilton was never going to get another at bat in the first spot in the order the rest of this year, do you think he is still a – right? We have him ranked at 39. Do you think he's still a top 50 player if he's solely a bottom-of-the-lineup hitter?
Probably not, because the amount of runs he loses puts him a shade out of the top 50. You know, one of my larger concerns about Hamilton right now is that he's just not hitting. And, you know, this kind of happened a little bit last year and they picked it up. And I know he can get hot, but he just really seems to be having problems making contact. And I think his defense and his speed will make him viable or keep him viable. But honestly, I do have my concerns about that in terms of ranking him going forward.
Makes sense. Lucas Duda, the star of all of Mike's teams.
He's my boyfriend.
Yeah. Duda's made the jump well into the top 100 overall for us. He's clocking in at 84. Where do you think at this point he finishes at the end of the year, Mike, from an average and power standpoint?
I keep saying that the average is going to come down, and it's come down a little bit from you know, where it was at the very beginning when he was, you know, hitting over 300. I still see him hitting 270, 275. You know, now we've seen the power, and the power is kind of coming in bursts. You know, I think, Brett, you mentioned this, that he could be a streaky guy. So I still see him, you know, he has, what, 8 home runs after his 2 that he hit today on Wednesday as we talk about this. I can still see him coming close to 25. Maybe he doesn't get there. Maybe he hits like 22 or 23. I mean, the thing about Duda, he's definitely the reason he's been better. He's definitely taking what the pitchers are giving him. And it's part of the reason the average gone up. It's part of the reason that the power isn't quite there. He's not swinging from the heels, you know, and we've talked about this before on the show. His approach has definitely been, there used to be a lot of movement up there. And I think, you know, Saris of Fangraphs mentioned this, and we've talked about this on Twitter. You know, he interviewed the coaches with the Mets, and they definitely worked with him on that. You can see it when you watch Duda. There's just a lot less movement. He's a lot, you know, more level. These changes are all legitimate, and there's no reason to me not to think that close to 25 home runs and 270, 275 is honestly a low end for him.
I'm with you on that. He's been a fun one to own this year.
Yeah, he really has.
Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of pitchers who are taking big jumps up here, but could continue to take big jumps as the season goes along. Do you think either AJ Burnett or Shelby Miller is a legitimate top 100 overall player by the end of the year? At least from a going forward standpoint. Which one would you rather have right now for the rest of the year?
Well, to answer both those, I think Miller has a shot. I mean, Burnett certainly has a shot too, because he's pitched well, but AJ Burnett almost always invariably goes through a stretch where he's either banged up a little bit, or he has one of those games where he just absolutely doesn't have it and kind of gets lit up. So, you know, he's also at an age, you know, last year was a hernia. I know that's behind him, but he's also at an age where kind of little maladies pop up and, you know, he's going to miss some time. So I think it's going to be harder for him to get there. I'll have to say, you know, between being in Pittsburgh and working again with Ray Searidge, it's certainly there for him. You know, Shelby Miller is the guy I just really trust at this point. You know, yeah, we know he's going to slip and he's not going to put up this level of numbers, but it seems like the issues that he was having with St. Louis and that people thought, you know, they weren't going to be able to fix. Roger McDowell has definitely, you know, done a terrific job with Miller. So, you know, when you're talking top 100 overall for a pitcher, you're still talking bottom of the top 100 for Miller. Let's not get crazy with this, you know, maybe 90, a little bit lower than that, but I think he can get there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm a huge AJ Burnett supporter, but yeah, I think Miller edges him out as well. And we have them ranked as such. We have Miller at 136 right now, and AJ Burnett at 142, which makes total sense. Shin-Soo Choo has been quite good since he was quite terrible. Do we think we could see not peak Chu, obviously, because he just doesn't do the same things that he does anymore. But do you think we could see a version of Chu that is a worthy, you know, third outfielder in just about every league?
Yes, I think third outfielder's fair. I think anything past that is unfair. It doesn't look like he's going to really run anymore, which is the big thing that really used to propel his value like way up. I do also think that given what happened to him last year, I don't like calling people injury prone, but there's things in his profile that suggests that he's going to, you know, run into some problems, you know, as far as like, you know, little maladies here and there. Third outfielder is certainly fair. Maybe if he gets a second, you're kind of talking bottom of the barrel of that, you know, OF2 designation. But yeah, I think the, you know, a lot of it was kind of the rust coming off for him. And, you know, he was just so bad at the beginning of the year that, you know, if you looked at his overall numbers, you'd think he's just been terrible all year. But that's how bad he was. You know, for him to get up to 233, which as I'm talking about this entering Wednesday is where he was, is almost an accomplishment.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was pretty optimistic about Chu coming into the year, and kind of held serve a little bit even when I wasn't quite sure over the first month of the season.
Okay.
But it's certainly paying off now. So let's do a couple of really, really quick hits of pitchers at the end of the list. The one guy who I look here and would rank higher if I were doing this today, maybe finalize these rankings about a week ago. So they're very up to date for just about everybody except the people who have really made a drastic difference in the last week. One of them is Noah Syndergaard. We know now the Mets are going to a six-man rotation for at least a while. This will kind of hold down his week-to-week value a little bit, but it looks like he'll stick. We have him at 285 in the guide. What's your best guess if we were to rank him again, which we will, in about, say, mid-June? About what number does he rise to?
Well, the conservative number would probably be like 185 or so. The aggressive number would be like 130. So why don't we meet somewhere in the middle and put him at like 160 or 165? You know, something we saw today is that, you know, and I've mentioned this to anyone who listened. You know, in my CBS expert league, I kind of accidentally put together an NL East like pitching staff. And that works out really well if you're not facing the Nationals. Those lineups are weak. Syndergaard is going to get to face the NL East a lot. So that really kind of plays into that value. But I also think, as you're alluding to, Brett, he's just really good. He's a lot better than I thought he would be. And as he showed today, and granted it was the Phillies, he was able – I think he threw like four changeups all day, and he was still able to kind of survive off of that. He's not going to quite survive as well off against better lineups, but I think the stuff he has right now plays a little bit better than some of the scouts thought it would.
Yeah, he's been absolutely excellent, and he is going to be a joy to watch. He's going to be a joy to watch hit. He's hitting 375.
He hit a home run today, which I work from home. I missed it though because I actually was like on a call.
Yeah.
It was straightaway center. It was a shot. And
I saw the replay. I missed it live.
That wasn't a cheapie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got some Texas strength. So who
is the other pitcher that you wanted to hit on?
Nobody important.
Okay.
So we will be providing lots of links to this. There's a page at Baseball Prospectus, which tells you everything that you can find in the in-season magazine. So we implore you to go check it out. I've already put it on Twitter. I'm sure a lot of us will. And we'll try to remember to include it in the blog post for the podcast. So with that, we're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap things up. Thank you for listening to episode 55 of Flags Fly Forever. We have and will always be a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. You have been listening to myself, Brett Sayer. Mike is Mike Janella. And George has been played by George Bissell. You can read all of us at baseballperspectus.com. Go subscribe today. You can get a premium membership, read all of our fun stuff on the fantasy side, read all of our awesome content on the prospect side, and get all the national writers that you know and love. You can sign up for a super premium membership and get access to the Bat Signal, which George is just getting exposure to for the first time today. So,
are you answering questions, George?
I haven't started yet, but it looks like it's going to be a heck of a process to get that going.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm in a 40 team mixed league, and this is my roster, and here are all my players, and you know, should I make this 6-for-6 deal? Have fun with that.
There's always like multiple offers in different scenarios. Yeah, there's some pretty crazy ones out there, but yeah, keep sending them in. I'll get to them as quickly as I can.
That's good. We We love it. You lose sleep over it, but we love it. As we talked about before, go download the in-season digital magazine. It's fun. You can play around with it. There are some videos and boxes and stuff to interact with. It's a good time. You will have fun, and it's free. So there's no reason not to. You can reach us as a podcast at Flags Fly Forever at baseballperspectives.com. And with that, we will see you next week. Good night.
Bye.